CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com. Here we are. And Pumi's just taking a little selfie of the screen there, which is nice. Pums is not at home. She's... Pumi, where are you? You're in Maritzburg? Is that where you are at the moment?
I'm in Pizza Maritzburg today.
The nexus of all the action last week, hey?
Dude, I'm like, it's about what? About half a kilometer away from that, the mall that was burning with the checkers and whatnot.
Right.
I'm about a half a kilometer from there. It's, and you know what? People are just getting over the shock. Everybody I spoke to, so when I landed last night at the airport, the lady at the counter when I went to pick up my car was telling me how hectic it was, how she just, even at the airport, but this is the thing that she also said was so hectic, when she was going home from work, because they were all told to leave early and whatever, and she lives in Edendale, one of the townships, so like, it was so bad there. There were people looting the looters.
Oh my
God! There were people who had set up like barricades in the township, and you're like trying to get in with your loot. They would like
they'd loot you. Of your unbelievable! Loot.
And that she saw some people in one of those dry cleaning vans. Somebody who'd stolen a dry cleaning van, and there were people inside just throwing clothes out of the van.
Oh my God!
Like people's dry cleaning. I was like, I told you guys, the chaos of chaos.
So,
like in the chaos of it all, there is no reasoning whatsoever.
When did you get there? Yesterday?
Yes, yesterday. Okay. I've got meetings here today and tomorrow with, you all know some of the work that I do. You know, like with some community leaders, some church leaders, that kind of stuff. That's why we're here, in the heart of.
And you say people are just starting to get over the shock now. I mean, that's not surprising. It usually takes a couple of days for people to work their way out of a situation like this.
And when yesterday when we came in, and this morning, so you can hear my OB experience here, some of the guys down here, I'm sitting at the breakfast area, which because of lockdown levels, they are not serving breakfast here the way that they normally serve breakfast as a hotel. So you have to come, they prepack the breakfast and people take it away. But some of the guys are kind of walking out. And I think it's a security contractor, because yesterday when I walked in, there were like two guys with rifles.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, what's going on here? The receptionist said they've been staying here for about 2 weeks and they are part of a security contract that's cut down, I think, from Joburg.
So the guy's walking around with the rifles and everything.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask one to come and say hi, but I don't see him anymore.
Well,
he might actually be gone to work.
I heard that
there's no breakfast. So we're not getting breakfast because there hasn't been delivery in the past 2 days. Their stock is low. And so we're going to have to go look for something, look for a wimpy or something.
Hell of a time to be a tourist in Maritzburg.
Dude, not the best. I brought bagels from the Woolworths from the airport.
Really?
Thank God. Because I thought about it. And I thought, what if I get here and I can't go and get supper? You know, so I, thank goodness, I went to there's that little Woolworths at the airport and bought like rotis and sandwiches and water. Kind of like going to the war front.
Yeah, this is how you have to prepare for things now. It's bizarre. I mean, I've got a friend in Cape Town. He was telling me about this taxi strike they've got going on in Cape Town, which apparently has crippled the place. And there are businesses where people are now offering to put their staff up for accommodation. So they're putting their you know, like coffee shops, restaurants, that kind of thing. They're actually putting their staff in hotels. Because otherwise it's going to be impossible for the staff to make it to work in the next 2 or 3 days. So it shows you how people make a plan, hey, sure.
But you know, last Thursday when we were talking with Jonathan and they've been talking about how crazy Durban and Pietermaritzburg and the Natal and Gauteng areas had become.
Right.
And in the morning when I woke up, it was the day before, there had been three people that were shot in the Western Cape. And I thought, this is crazy. It's like everything unraveling at the seams.
Yeah.
And nobody, last week, nobody was talking about the taxi situation.
No.
There are videos, and I don't understand why social media, why there are so many people so invested in putting stuff on social media that is just like somebody getting shot in a taxi or the aftermath of like five people bloodied and dead on the floor.
Like, well, you know what bothers me is you've hinted at it already. Like, there's no build up to news. It just, news just happens without any warning. There's no, you know, you don't see any escalation in tensions like you used to maybe see. You don't see a story slowly building. It just happens out of the blue. I mean, like last week with, you know, those riots and the looting. It just happened out of the blue and people were caught very much off guard. And in Cape Town now, they've had maybe a day's warning before any of this could be sorted out. And it's unbelievably messy, you know. It's very, very messy. It worries me a little bit. Strange. Anyway. All right, so Pumi's in Maritzburg. Bulelo is in Johannesburg. And we are all looking after you. Apparently the app is down. I'm seeing some comments here that people are saying that the app is down. Is that right? You sorted it,
Bulelo? We are on it.
Okay, we're on it.
We are. We apologize for the inconvenience. Our technicians are currently working on it.
This is where you play this music and everybody holds on a second, right? That music that they play on... You know, when you go into on hold, basically when you're waiting for a number or any of that stuff, this stuff, right? This is we understand your problem and we care about you. Your concerns will be addressed shortly. Stay with us, please.
Your call is valuable to us.
Exactly. As we try to resolve technical problems and issues. That's what it sounds like. All right, a couple of questions and comments that are coming in already. Are we expecting a second wave of looting since waves are the in thing these days, says Sibiya Duduzi. What do you think of that? Do you think there'll be a second
it's a little
wave?
Bit ignorant. No, I think it's a little ignorant. Looting works in levels. It's more Eskom-ish vibe. Yeah, so come on, Sibiya. There's levels. Yeah, we're going, we went straight to level 9.
Mm.
Yes.
Three Times a Charm says, I hate that music. Yanni says, I love that music, especially makes me bang my phone. Okay, nice sarcasm coming in there. Tony says, it didn't just happen last week, it was orchestrated. Well, that's true. Can I ask you something? Before we get to the burning platform, which we'll obviously get to a bit later on in the show this morning, we're going to be joined by Bulelani Balabala, who's our man on the ground in Tembisa. And he was part of watching this devastation that has made itself evident in places like Tembisa. He's a small business owner. He supports other small businesses. We're going to find out what this meant to the people there, because we're talking about shopping malls and things. The reality is that a lot of these shopping malls are insured in what's going to happen. And I'm not making an excuse for looting, but they're insured. And what's going to happen is they're going to be paid out. And then they're not going to put that money back into rebuilding the shops. They're going to take the money and they're going to shut down the shops. That's what many people are going to do. But the small business owners are going to live with this for a long time. And I thought it would be a good idea to talk to Bulelani. We've also got Mike Schussler, who will be joining us for the first time on the Burning Platform. Mike Schussler, the economist. And we'll talk a little bit about the longer-term impact of all of this on our currency, on our economy, and on the business community, what that's going to mean. So very much a business focus on the Burning Platform this morning. And Pumi will be joining us for that too. But here's my question. The news media have been saying for the last week and a half, or week at least, that they have found the kingpins. They found the guys who are behind this dirty dozen, right, that they've been talking about. The 12 people who've orchestrated all of this violence and looting and rioting that we saw last week. But they're not telling us who they are, which is so weird. They've let one name out about some guy from the Patriotic Alliance, someone you've never heard of before, some like mid-level gangster. And it reminds me of what happened when the Guptas landed at Watercliff Air Force Base. There was some middle manager who was blamed for everything, some person who we'd never, ever heard of, someone who was in charge of like locking and unlocking the doors at 6 a.m. or whatever it might have been. It wasn't the most important person there. And I just am sick to death of the secrecy. The ANC have got to let us know all their secrets now, because if Jacob Zuma doesn't, then Cyril must. And if Cyril doesn't, then Jacob Zuma must. And all the people in between, all these small Anyana skeletons have got to pour out of the cupboard now. It's enough already. Who are these people who were orchestrating this? And why can't they just tell us? The ordinary people of South Africa deserve to know who the government and the intelligence services think the responsible people are. Apparently, they've been charged in court. We don't know any of the details. I've had it with the secrecy. All right. It's enough already. Stop. We don't believe you. And unless you start to be totally honest with us and you start to play open cards with us, we are not going to take you seriously as a government anymore. Am I wrong? Is anybody else in the same position? Stop with the secrecy. Stop with the lies. You're not in the struggle anymore. You people of this country, you pay your salary as the Minister of Police or the Minister of Intelligence or the President of the Republic. Deserve to know who these people are. All right? How about it? What do you think, Booms?
I've been brewing a conspiracy theory.
Oh, here
right?
we go.
Because depending on who you ask, whether you, Ayanda Dlodlo, Begicele, Cyril, no,
they all say different
no,
things.
You and Mapisa, everybody's got a different
yes,
experience of what it is that happened. So I have a theory. My theory is that there probably was some kind of conspiracy and insurrection bubbling, but right. it's not coming out of the ANC. I don't think the ANC can organize a piss up in the pool.
Huh.
So,
okay.
I think it's someone more. What they want my background sound to be louder. No, guys, I'm sorry, man. It's like an OB. Get with the program. People are like living.
No,
here.
No, no.
Just, I'm so, bringing so, it from the front.
Don't worry. Don't worry about Greg. There's always something going on with Greg. All right. So let's just talk about this theory of yours. So you say that the ANC is so disorganized and in such disarray,
yeah.
they can't actually organize an insurrection or a coup or an insurgency.
Yeah, because think about it. If you organize an insurrection or a coup, mm-hmm. you have an end game, right? You want to either overthrow the government because you want to install someone else.
Right.
Or, like, what's their game? They want to overthrow Cyril and then install who? Another faction of the ANC coming.
Right.
right? They're in
right.
power.
Okay. I got you.
But I do think that there's something sinister going on and they don't even know about it. And I think it's probably got to do with I don't know, like nuclear energy, like it's
like the Russians,
like that. Someone, yeah, like the
and
Russians.
That's why Didi,
haven't got
that's
their
why,
nuclear deal across.
That's why Didi Mabuza is over there at the moment.
And they've kidnapped Didi Mabuza, but here's the other part of it, right?
Oh, well, if they were going to kidnap the least, they're going to kidnap the least important cog in the machine. I mean, that's really going to stop us dead in our tracks. Hold on, everybody. We can't possibly carry on because Didi Mabuza isn't here. Please.
No, they've kidnapped Didi Mabuza, and they're keeping him. Because where is the man, guys? Where is the man? He's been gone to Russia for, like, this whatever this poisoning story is.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of poison is this that takes like 6 months to kick in? I'm telling you. So he's hauled up in a basement in the Kremlin somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're just creating all of this chaos here. So as the ANC is like hitting each other, like they literally are running around like headless chickens bumping into each other, then they're going to like go, you know, the best thing as the people are like, the ANC is useless, Cyril is useless, we don't want Jacob Zuma back. Everybody, like, nobody is available. And then everyone's going to be like, but you know that guy, Didi Mabuza, he hasn't been part of this mess. He hasn't been part of all of this. He's been quiet, minding his business. Maybe he'd be a good, like, caretaker. Then the Russian play. Then the Russians will, like, because now they've tortured him.
All right, but the Russians, then. All right, but then if that's the case, the Russians are stupider than everyone else because they've kidnapped completely the wrong person, as someone who has absolutely no brains, no sway, who we wouldn't miss if he died in a hurricane. Like, we wouldn't miss. Let them execute Didi Mabuza. Let's see what happens.
That's who you want. Maybe that's doing who us a you favor. Want as a Manchurian candidate. That's who you want as a Manchurian candidate.
You reckon?
He's not going to think on his own. He's just going to do what you tell him to do.
You're not even the first person to say this, because I actually got a WhatsApp from someone yesterday with more or less the same thing about Russian nuclear energy. You know, Rosatom, and that's why Didi's there. And you're not... you're not the only one who's saying this, Pumi. I'm not saying that you're not crazy or that the other person who told me this isn't crazy. But, you know, everything is possible with these idiots we've got in charge right now. Everything is possible. So no conspiracy theory is dumb. They're all valid.
And that one's not crazy because, you know, back in the day, like if royal families and if you wanted to make sure that someone keeps a pact, is you would take their first son.
Mm-hmm.
And the son would live with the other sort of kings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So when we've seen this before in
ransom.
History. So yeah, that's it. Yeah. So Mabuza of all people.
I mean, really, who knew? If he's playing an important role in all of this, then I say let them kill him. No problem with that. So I just want to bring this up because, Shane, this is sad. Errol, who listens to us, says his brother, who was a big fan of ours, died yesterday from the virus. He was 31. My God, that age. That is very, very odd that someone should die. So, yeah, first of all, I'm really sorry, Errol. So, obviously, our condolences. That's horrible. And you know, I get very upset only if people who listen to us die. If people who don't listen to the show die, and potato, potato. But if you listen to the show, I get very upset. So, Errol, I'm very sorry to hear that. And you know, may you and your family have all the strength you need to get through this very, very difficult time. It's always awful. And it's especially awful that someone should die at such a young age. Were there comorbidities? Was there something else going on? Or did this just happen out of the blue? I mean, it's very, very rare that people in their 30s should die of coronavirus. We've seen the figures. Speaking of which, I put this up. Let me just see if I can find this for you quickly, because I actually found a little chart that I filled in yesterday. Just basically, this tells you about whether or not you are likely to get coronavirus or die from it. And obviously it has to do with your age and everything else. So here it is. I filled in this thing. Yeah. I'm just going to read you the results. So as a person my age, 43 years old, what they do is they give you a percentage chance of hospitalization and death at my age. So I have a 6% chance of hospitalization at my age as a male in the average population in the world. And I have a 0.2% chance of death. So that's really, really small. And you've got to be able to do risk assessment, right? So as an individual, you must work out what the chances of you getting this are. And this was just a site that I found. You could probably look up anything on Google and you'll find a similar site that compares age, gender, and it asks you if you have any of the serious comorbidities. And then it gives you a chance of, you know, a percentage chance of things going wrong, either hospitalization or death. But at 0.2% chance of death, you know, I've got the same amount of chance really of being hit by lightning or having a car accident is probably more than that. Heart disease is probably more than that. A stroke is probably more than that. Accidents are probably more than that for someone at my age. So really, I think
you could get stabbed by a scorned woman. Scorned
woman stabbing is a very high percentage, actually. It's a good point.
Let's consider everything.
Scorned woman stabbing. Everything. I must look up what the percentage chance of that is, too. But, you know, this is the whole thing, and this is what actuaries do. I mean, what we're really dealing with now is what actuaries are busy with. This is what you study as an actuary. You study the chances of something happening, and that's why they work in insurance companies, so that they can figure out what the chances are.
And you know, the actuarial conversation is a nice kind of little throw forward, because you're going to hear later when we talk to Bulelani how much actuaries have played a role in why a lot of small township businesses are actually not insured because of that risk assessment thing.
Exactly.
And it's
Well, I was talking to somebody, and I will move on from this political stuff for a moment, because we're going to be focused very heavily on it during the Burning Platform. But I was speaking to somebody the other day who has owned a shopping mall in the townships for a long time. He's probably owned it for about 20 years. And now he's really pissed off because his township mall was looted and mostly destroyed, and there was a lot of damage, arson, and all the rest of it. And he wants to get out now. He wants to cut and run because he's had enough. I said to him, look, let's have some perspective here, because that's what I think many of us miss in all of this, is that we forget that for 20 good years, the guy's made incredible money out of that shopping mall. You know, he's made a really good living, and the people who live in that area have been giving him money through rent and through buying from the shops that rent from him. There's been an economy going there, and he's been a very big recipient of the money that's come from commercial enterprise in that area. Now, is he going to leave it? Because if he is, then people like me I'll take the risk, thank you. Because for 1 week of violence and looting, as horrible as it is, and we've got to be, again, you've got to look at this in perspective with some context. For 1 week of violence and looting, you're willing to give up what essentially has been really good income for 20 years. That doesn't sound like a good deal to me. And there are probably a few people who feel the same way about their own businesses. So if you were hit very hard last week, I'm just saying to you, hold tight, fuss bait, as we say in South Africa, and wait and see what happens, because there may be a silver lining on the cloud. But you've got to remember also that up to now, it's been good. Right? Business has been good. You've been able to do all the stuff that you've wanted to do, and you've made good money out of that. You can't just decide to give up because of 1 week's very, very strange and very bizarre circumstances. It's not part of a continuum. It's not as if over the last 20 years, your income has been declining from that shopping center. It's not as if over the past 20 years, that shopping center has become less and less valuable. It's not as if people have stopped going to that shopping center over the last 20 years in droves in the last year. It's just 1 week, which is an aberration. So again, this is where you need the actuaries to come in and look at it. And if you've got a little township business and you've been hit really hard, and we'll talk to Bulelani about this too later, then you don't want to give up now. Now is the time. You know, what does Buffett say? You know the saying, Bulelo, when risk is high, buy. And when, what is that saying? He's basically saying when things are really looking difficult and dangerous, that's when you buy. And when everybody's complacent and comfortable and happy, that's when you sell. Because otherwise you're going to be in the majority rather than the minority. And you never make money as the majority, right? You make money where you think about things and you analyze the risk and you decide this is a risk worth taking. But every part of risk has some reward attached to it. And similarly, if you think everything's comfortable and safe, well, probably millions of other people do. So they'll be making the same investment you are, which means your returns are just going to be much, much lower. That's simple mathematics. You don't need to be an actuary to figure that out. Anyway, if you know how that saying goes and you can put it more eloquently than I did, then please do and let me know. The current risk has become insurmountable, says Keith. I don't know about that. I mean, you know,
there's about insurmountable.
Yeah, insurmountable. I mean, Keith, that's quite defeatist. And I know you're going to say that you're being realistic, but you don't have to invest.
But is it though? Is it though?
What?
Is it realistic though? When current risk being insurmountable, like that, Keith, I'm sorry, I have to disagree, because for me, the current risk wasn't there a month ago.
Correct.
And actually, what you see as the current risk is looking at a very narrow window,
right,
of what's happened. In 3 months from now,
yeah,
by the very fact that today the looting is almost non-existent anymore, it's gone. There's no one burning, no one looting. No, you know what I'm saying? It's now just rebuilding and cleaning up the rubble.
And
so 3 months from now, it's not like
it's going to be. Those people in those areas that were hit hardest, they still need to eat. They still need to go and shop. They still need to buy the basic commodities. They haven't stopped existing. just because of all of this. So that even if they have a much more stress and difficulty in terms of how far their rand has to stretch, the fact is, if you're a shop in their area, you will eventually start benefiting again. This is how business works. If business was easy, everybody would be rich, right? Yeah. If business was simple, everyone would be rich. It's not how it works.
And also, you've never seen, you know, when you push people to the point of where they have to survive, which is where a lot of people are now, like properly, is you've never seen the human spirit come through like then. I mean, listen, you only have to go to, I don't want to sort of diminish what we've got here, but you go to Zambia, you go to Malawi, and you start to get into the sticks. People will, once you touch their survival point, they will make a plan, insurmountable. Right. Japan had Nagasaki win, like yesterday. Everyone right now has something Japanese in their house. Like right now, you want to talk about insurmountable. No way.
You've brought up Nagasaki twice this week, Bulelo. You're a little bit obsessed with it.
The Olympics. I'm caught up, Gareth.
You're caught up in
the land
Olympics.
Of the rising sun has told me.
That's true. All right. So, Pumi, I want to ask you about something that's not political related stuff, because we always end up talking politics with you in the Burning Platform, and that means that we hardly ever get to hear the fun stuff that's going on. Now, you've been thinking a lot about double.
Sorry, Gareth.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gareth. Before you get into it, to those of who are saying that the app is down, it is actually not on our side. Sort of the guys that look after things, don't want to say the company's name, but they are currently down, so that is out of our hands.
Oh shit!
And we are in touch with them. So that's just an update there.
All right, let's try and figure that out. We'll see what we can do from our side, obviously. So Pumi's going to tell us about her thoughts. She's had some deep philosophical thoughts about double ply toilet paper, and this is an important thing. I used to have single ply toilet paper in my house. I only used
You're
to
a monster.
I know, but I used to put it out in the guest bathrooms and in my own bathroom. You know, it's a little bit kind of Spartan. It's it didn't bother me though. I never really worried about whether it was double or single ply. And I got complaints from my then girlfriend. I got complaints from everybody else I know, and people were furious with me that I should have the temerity to put out one ply toilet paper. So I don't understand this furore. I don't understand the fuss. I mean, now I have double ply toilet paper because people complained so much that they thought I was a monster, like clearly Mbolelo does. But Pumi, what are your philosophical thoughts on double ply, especially now while you're in a hotel?
Listen here, how much did you actually save? How much did you actually save?
Not a lot.
This thing comes to me every single time. You know, we're in a new office. This building, yeah. And I ask myself, like, that the landlord in the bathrooms has single ply toilet paper. It is ridiculous. And I thought it must be some kind of cost saving thing.
Yeah.
But I can't see, and why must you start? You know, we are subjected to so much crap in the world, as it were. So much
crap.
Double ply toilet paper makes. You know, double ply toilet paper, it's a small thing, but it's a big thing. It's a small thing, but it's a big thing, really. Because
massive thing.
Dude, is it really luxury? No. I think it's an essential item. I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to know about boys. I know girls, we kind of like, you know, we need the double ply for
maybe that's
toilet
it.
Paper.
You see.
But I don't know. But still, how much do you really save?
For me it wasn't about saving when I was using the single ply. I didn't really care about what kind of loo paper I was using. I mean, listen, just remember, one or two generations ago there was no such thing. We're not talking about hundreds of years ago. The toilet paper's been around for hundreds of years. People used to use a sponge in ancient Rome. I mean, you can imagine using a sponge. Jesus, that's got to be insanitary. We've used toilet paper for maybe 100 years, okay? Not much more than that. Now, if people like me, who I see lots of people saying I'm a Philistine, what the hell's wrong with me? Look at Carl. Ooh. Carl says, Gareth, what sort of monster has one ply? You have two hands and you put cream on them. You have one asshole. Look after it. All right. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. People just use more when the paper's thinner. That's a good point from Eleutheria. If you are into cost saving, people are going to use more if you give them the crappy stuff, if you'll pardon that pun. Nico says, Good crap, Gareth. Life is too short for one ply. For someone like me who cucks up to three times a day, I can't live without two ply. you shit three times a day? That doesn't sound like you've got a good...
That's a good...
That's not a healthy bowel. That's
no, maybe he's eating figs.
Oh,
maybe he's eating figs all day. You don't know this. No. That's the food. That's the food emperors, you know, those figs. But also there's triply now for those that really want to live their best life.
That's true. There is three-ply.
Yeah, there's triply now. If you really want to sort of ascend from Neanderthal into human, triply.
Well, I'm a Neanderthal.
You see, Andre
talked
about...
He says... Toilet paper is disgusting caveman technology. According to Andre, he uses wet wipes. Oh, my God. Really?
Wow.
Geesh.
That's next level.
Can you throw those down the those shouldn't go into the loo. Surely it does it? Doesn't it create problems? No. Okay. All right. Yanni says, all these people complaining about single-ply toilet paper. My grandmother used grass. Here in Switzerland, says Sven, you can't buy single ply, or double is hard to find too. So what do they use, three ply in Switzerland?
Yeah, probably, because they're living.
Yeah. A two ply is essential. This is how people are talking about this. It's essential, huh? That's amazing. You can't mess with people who say that's essential. When your finger pierces that single ply, icona, says Obi Kenobi. Our local kiosk is making a killing, probably more than Spar at the moment. Yeah, you see, that's to go back to the business. That's probably where the people who are willing to take the risk, they'll make the money. In Switzerland, they have a dispenser that only single bits come out. It's like one block at a time. Ugh, that's ridiculous. I'm not a fan of double ply. This is, finally, someone who sees it like I do. McGowan BB says, it's too slippery. I like to get into the grooves for a good clean that only single ply offers.
Actually, the Arabians have the solution for you.
Yeah.
You need the hose pipe and then two ply just to, it's like cleaning a car, you know? I've always said to my Arabic friends, is the water's not enough because you can't just clean the car like that. Otherwise, you still need to wipe the drops. You have to wipe the drops.
Gail says, if you have a septic tank, which many people in this country have, one ply is a much better choice for the system. We used to have a septic tank on the farm, and that's probably where I got used to using one ply. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't. I don't know, but it's never bothered me. And then I had all these complaints from... Mostly from women, I'll say that most of the complaints were from women. How can you have single-ply toilet paper? This is outrageous. Maybe that's what it boils down to. Three and four-ply is standard in Switzerland. Four-ply?
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, four-play, sure, but four-ply.
That's blowing my mind. Four-ply standard. Wow. I mean,
I'm not shocked.
That's got to be like using a face cloth. That's like this thick four ply. It's ridiculous. Here in Greece, says John, you can't flush the toilet paper. You have to throw your toilet paper in a plastic bag. I've been here 2 years and I still can't get used to it. That is revolting. I'm sorry.
What happens when you don't pay your taxes.
Yeah, that's probably also true.
They must pay their taxes. What about a bidet, Gareth? I wanted to ask you that. You ever thought...
No,
if you now want to start living that life, get
I'm
a bidet.
I'm a fan of those things. I'm a big fan
of
those.
That thing is top tier, guys. Mm. That thing is top tier. Like, it's, man.
Absolutely.
You're living the life.
Absolutely. Zach says, four-ply is a newspaper. Fuck. Yeah. In Vietnam, you use a bum gun. Yeah, that's what they do in the Arab world, too. In Indonesia, public toilets had a hose pipe. There was no toilet paper, so you'd spray down with a hose pipe. Interesting. Sure. So lots of different ways. Who knew this would be the most exciting topic?
And then what? Drip dry.
Yeah. Or let me tell you the biggest scammers. Mm. Drip dry.
That sounds revolting.
Well, so in Egypt, right, I remember I was unaware, and I went into like a public bathroom. And there, because Egypt is just a travel scam, right? Like, you got to pay for everything. Just to fart in Egypt, you got to pay.
Yeah.
So I went into a public toilet. And I remember Carl Pilkington telling the story on a podcast. Very funny guy. Anyway, I went in there. did what I do, number two.
Yeah.
No toilet paper.
Oh god.
But what the guys at the gate, so that just the part, they actually sell you the toilet paper.
No.
That's what the guys have figured out. The Westerners come there. Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Egypt is a full scam. Like the whole thing, you just pay for everything.
So listen to this. Good Stuff says, my dad told me in the army, they would only get a few pieces of toilet paper. They would fold it into a little triangle and then use it.
I don't know if you've seen. Have you heard how they did it? I don't know if you want to hear these. So, you put the finger through. You wipe. So you've got the toilet paper like that, and then you wipe the brown stuff. And then you clean your finger.
Oof.
And then what they used to do in the army, so obviously for tracking, is you have to bury it. You have to bury it so that, yeah.
Jesus.
Otherwise, if you just poop anywhere, obviously, if they're patrolling, they can see that there's human beings in the area. Yeah, it's quite an interesting thing I remember reading.
Charles says, guys, some of us are having breakfast, but then quite rightly, Cabello corrects Charles and says, you can't have breakfast and listen to the Gareth Cliff Show, Charles. There's an experienced man in Cabello. All right. Elaine says, I was once on a yacht in Croatia and there was a hand shower only in the toilet. Didn't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. See, this is very important.
Wait, we need more clarity there, Elaine. I am not sure. What? Head shower in the toilet.
So little one of those. It's like a pipe with a shower head on it, and then you'd use that as your. And so they have that in parts of the world, where you know it's kind of like a portable a bidet on a chain, basically. That's what it is.
Wow.
Fold it, pull the tip off. The tip is for cleaning under the fingernail. Oh, that is disgusting. That's from DK. Oi, that's revolting. All right. Enough lavatorial shit for one morning, literally. Let's get onto it. There are some headlines that we need to pay attention to this morning. Let's take a look at what's actually happening in the world. On the 22nd, that's what the day is today. So apparently meat was looted in Etekwini and it's not safe for consumption. Surprise, surprise, because it's now been a week and a bit. So if you're going to eat meat that was looted, then you're going to get very, very sick. The Etekwini municipality has issued a warning to the public not to consume meat and poultry products that were looted at the Sequence cold storage warehouse in Hammersdale. The city said its environmental health department inspected the facility and found that the meat products could potentially be unsafe to consume. These perishable meat and poultry products were not being stored and transported at the correct temperatures. So I suppose Darwinism will take care of a few people. You know, I don't feel too bad about this. I don't know about you.
And this is what Duduzane Zuma meant when he said you need to loot responsibly.
If you're going to loot, exactly.
Meat will go off.
Correct. The IEC says it needs to consult on a possible delay of elections. Now, why would we need to delay our elections? There are other countries where there's been no delay in elections and they've had as much difficulty in dealing with coronavirus as we have. These riots shouldn't result any postponement of the elections because they are seemingly under control now. It's more or less sorted out. Right, Pumi, this sounds like an excuse. I mean, why the hell are they talking about the elections being postponed? This is playing right into the hands of certain political interests. And it seems to me that Glenn Mashinini, who is the CEO of the IEC, the chairperson of the IEC, the Independent Electoral Commission, he must get his act together. Sort your people out, Glenn. Do the hard work that you have to do in the IEC and make sure that this gets going. If we could do our 1994 elections, then why the hell can't we do these? Right?
You know, and Gareth, there really is no need to be postponing the elections. None. I think this is the opportunity for the guys to become innovative. It's an opportunity for the guys to leapfrog their archaic systems.
Right.
I don't think that... I'll be very interested to hear what Judge Museneke comes out with when he puts out his report. But yeah. I'm not sure if we need to be postponing elections. People must lose the election.
Well, exactly. That's probably why they want to postpone. They can see the writing on the wall.
Yeah. This, especially now, where people are still feeling their anger, where people are still feeling kind of, this is when change happens. This is when change happens. That's why we must have the elections.
Absolutely.
For what?
No, we've got to get on with it. There's no excuse for this, and nobody's going to buy it. UCT is the first place to launch in Africa an online high school platform. This is very, very good news, and well done to UCT. Apparently, the University of Cape Town is offering an online high school platform. Vice Chancellor Mamogheti Pakeng said that the announcement on Wednesday morning was a major education milestone for UCT, for South Africa, and for the continent. In collaboration with education technology company Valentia Institute, UCT will be offering a CAPS-aligned curriculum for learners in grades 8 to 12. The most important tool every South African needs is affordable, quality education that will qualify them for employment or for a university degree. That is the only way we will close the inequality gap in the country. This is a necessity not only for the university sector, but for everyone in the country, said the Chancellor of the university, the Vice Chancellor, rather. So that's good news. And for parents, oh my God, I have to tell you, and Pumi, you probably passed this point as well. My sister-in-law, we all had like a family pizza night on Tuesday. My sister-in-law was finished. She says she's over it. She has stopped even making the effort with the children when it comes to having to do all this homework and all these tasks. She said she's a shit teacher. She's accepted that she can't do this. The kids' handwriting is deteriorating, the eldest one. She said the youngest one can't concentrate for more than 5 minutes. She doesn't know how other people get it right. She doesn't know how teachers do it, but she says she cannot do it anymore. Now, I wonder how many parents are also past the point of no return and are just exasperated with this home education thing, right? Horrible.
Guys, you must appreciate the teachers. Now we appreciate teachers. Né? Now we appreciate. And also, now we actually get to appreciate what horrendous little monsters kids are.
Yeah,
thank
like when you.
When
you actually have to spend so much time with them. Like they don't know how to write their names. They don't know. Oh, God. It's. I'm telling you now, guys. And that's why you must even appreciate the smart people you have around you. Because they survived like out of, because a lot of people actually haven't grown much from that irritating little person that they are. Mm-hmm. They're just a bigger irritating person. So then now you must appreciate the people around you that are smart and nice and thoughtful and
that are moderating your lack of civilization.
Listen, yeah, people must go back to school. I am every week when they send that thing from school that says, like, we're doing a survey, how many people are ready to go back to school or want to go back to in contact. I'm just like, send them back to school.
You must rig the vote. You must rig it. You must say, you must put more ballots in, and you must rig it for them to go back.
Why are people it seems to me that a lot of teachers are reticent to go back because we know that this isn't a major risk to kids, so kids are not the issue. It's the old people, it's the teachers, and it's the parents who seem to be the problem here. Kids are desperate to go back to school. Am I wrong?
No. I think kids are desperate to go back to school. They want to be with their friends. Also, they don't want to be with their parents. They don't want to be with old people.
Right.
But I don't want to miss my chance here. Sorry. Pumi, I think you've made a great point. Now you parents, and I've gotten pushback before, now you know what I'm saying. Don't bring your kids to nice restaurants because now you know what monsters they are. So I was right. It just took you a little bit of time to see it. I don't want them there when I'm paying 400 Rand for a steak. Take them to Spur or whatever. Stop bringing them to nice restaurants. This is awesome. Thank you, Pumi, for saying what you're saying. Now you know your kids are monsters. Fantastic.
Wait, are people paying like 400 Rand steaks for their little people?
That wasn't the point.
Like what? No. That is a real point. Like people are taking their kids to restaurants that, like, no ways.
I've left.
Like
two
I'm not spending that kind of money. I've like left you must have a Spur burger. Spur burger.
That's a reasonable price. No, I agree. You never spend – if your kid is – if it's more than 100 Rand in your children's food, you're overdoing it. Anushka says – yes, people, this term was no joke. One out of my three daughters failed the term. Schools open next week. All the best to all. Yeah. Listen, some of us are not teachers, eh? I attempted to homeschool, says Riet, my son, for 3 years while living in a remote area in Namibia. I couldn't do the maths. I was a cuck teacher. Yeah, that's also a good point. Homeschooling, says Mandia, is ruining my relationship with my kids. See, that's the truth. Yeah. Yeah. And Eleutheria says, my nephews are young enough that it won't affect their outcomes long term. Tell her not to worry.
Well, no, it will.
It will.
It will. Because it will. These are the foundation years.
Yeah.
These are the years where you actually have to get shit right.
Yeah.
Like, this is where you learn to do all the stuff so that later you're actually learning the content. You're not busy with the basics. These are the years that it's going to fuck it all up.
Mm-hmm.
ECD. It's called ECD, yeah.
Early childhood development. DK says, teachers are chatful. My daughter is now teaching internationally online. It's double the salary. Yeah, see, that's also the problem, is what motivation is there for them to go back to the old ways, right? There's no motivation for a teacher. What is a teacher going to benefit by going back to school now? Let them be little shits, says Ali. Imagine being born without your consent. That's the only thing we're supposed to be grateful for, and we have no say in. Sure, Ali, we're going straight to the... There's a professor that you need to hear from in Cape Town. I forget his name now, something with a B. And this guy is like, life is just this thing that is foisted upon you, and you should be resentful about it your whole life. And really, the only choice you have is not being born. And, you know, it's tough.
Antinatalism.
That's right.
He's the head of philosophy at UCT. His name will come to me now, but I know who you're talking about.
I can't remember.
Interesting guy. I did like a round... I mediated a round table discussion with him. Very, very interesting guy. While I lived in Cape Town.
Isn't it Benatar?
David Benatar.
That's right. Benatar. David, so anyway, Benatar, he's the guy you need to. We need to get him on the show, actually, to talk to him. What an interesting philosophy that guy has. All right. So schooling has become an artifact since children have cell phones. That might be true as well. But
that's the thing, though. I think that's the one thing that, for me, has come out of this whole experience is really, is school still, I mean, the system of school was created so that people can sit down and work in factories, right? It was because of the mass industrialization.
The Industrial Revolution.
It was, is it still necessary? Is it still necessary to learn in that way? And there's lots of things that one can learn. And this is also why most people hate school, but they like post-school, because when you get to university, or post or tertiary, you're only doing the stuff that you like, the stuff that's going to benefit you going forward. I was like, gotta rethink the system. You know, the parents hate it, the kids hate it, the teachers are compliant individuals who know how to like do the same thing year in and year out.
Right.
For all eternity. But like, is that the way the world really works still?
Well, Zach says the homework will make you doubt your own intelligence, I tell you. Oh yeah. That's absolutely true. Good Stuff says, parents should at least teach their children to read and write. How much do you want to depend on other people to teach your kids? I could read and write before going to grade one. Thank you to my mom. Yeah, you see, that's not a bad suggestion, actually. You should be able to teach your kids to read and write, surely. I mean, that's not really difficult stuff, is it? Or does it have to be? CPTS says, or Cape Town S, says if teachers want to go back and still take the money, they can stream their classes. If you can find a way that could be allowed. Yeah. Rebellious Ruth agreeing with Pumi, basically saying our school model is archaic, vocational, and the basics for masses is key. Maths is so deflating. Yeah, but you need to do that. Someone also bringing up David Benatar. Thank you very much, Alexandra.
Whenever I hear people say...
Hmm?
Yeah. Do maths. The next time I hear somebody, Pythagoras' theorem. When am I ever going to use that? It's get the hell out of my face, you moron! You're not going to be able to figure out.
You need to understand
how to think when you.
Yeah,
when
logic,
you want.
Logic you would be to. Good. Logic would be a good subject to teach. Correct, and maths teaches you that. If kids don't go back to school, who will be just smart enough to operate the levers of the machine? That's exactly right. And then cliffcentral.com reminding me this morning to like and subscribe. So Mbulelo, it's your turn to do the like and subscribe. You're a professional YouTuber. You know how to do this. Go ahead.
If you love yourself, there is a gentleman who dominated radio for 20 years or so in South Africa. His name, Gareth Cliff. Cliff Central. The first part of that, if you use the classical education system, is his surname. Now, if you are listening to this, you probably think he's not a terrible human. Bottom right corner here, like, share, subscribe. It's business. You are the customer.
Not a terrible human, huh? I don't know if that's...
Bottom left corner.
Oh, sorry. I didn't do maths.
Here we go. Professional YouTuber just let me down. Shocking. So, guys, today is apparently the coldest day so far in Gauteng. I don't know about in KZN, Pumz. It's usually a little bit more temperate there. But Maritzburg can get very cold.
Maritzburg can get very cold. Yo, it's cold out here today. It's cold. Mm. It's like 2 degrees.
Well, I'm looking at the temperatures here where I am. So it says 3 degrees. So I wonder if things are frozen outside. I'm going to have to go and take a look at the damage after the show this morning. I'm not looking forward to that at all. Oh, 2 degrees in Pietermaritzburg. Jesus. Oh, okay. Well, it's only 1 degree less than us, Pums. What are you looking at there, Mbulelo? I can see where you are because I've got one of those apps that tells me where everything else is as well. So apparently, Cape Town's 8 degrees right now. Durban's 9. See, Durban's always got it right, hey? Yeah. Even at the coldest day of the year, Durban's still not nearly as bad. It's like a good couple of degrees higher than the rest of us. All right. Here's something funny that I saw in the news yesterday.
No way, is that minus 10 in Bloemfontein can't be real?
Is that for real?
Oh, yeah.
Really, really? Oh, my God. That's frightening.
They're different people.
Bloemfontein is just, it's a horrible place. Oh, it's horrible. Shani saying minus 10 in Bloem. Good Lord. That is terrible. So apparently Tony says Stilby had freezing rain last night. Yes, sus. Yeah, that's just terrible. So here's a funny story. This comes from Liverpool. Now, I don't know how, but Liverpool is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, or was, until UNESCO decided they were going to rescind that decision. So they've stripped Liverpool of their UNESCO World Heritage Site status because they say that there are too many developments on the waterfront and the place looks shit. Now, I've always maintained that where they build hideous new buildings and they ruin places of historical or heritage value, that those places should lose all their status in UNESCO. And apparently the new stadium that they built there is part of the problem. There are all kinds of flats that they've put up, ugly buildings all around it. Liverpool, I've never thought of Liverpool as being a UNESCO World Heritage Site anyway. I mean, Liverpool's probably one of the most hideous places in the whole of the UK. Liverpool, Manchester, and Birmingham. I mean, between the three of them, really, if every building fell down, it wouldn't be the world's biggest tragedy. You know, provided there weren't people in it, it would actually be we'd be getting rid of an eyesore. You'd be sorting out the problem rather than making it worse. And I wonder
lots of Brummies unhappy.
Ugh. I wonder about places in South Africa. You know, we do have such beautiful, beautiful places in South Africa, but none of them are really urban. There are very few urban areas in South Africa that you could consider beautiful. That apartheid era architecture, do you remember that stuff? That hideous...
Concrete.
Those prefab concrete panels that people used to put on things. You remember at your school, all the schools... They had those like banisters and balconies along the different sort of levels. And there were those prefab concrete things with like bolts in them. And they all looked like they belonged in fascist Italy or, you know, like Nazi Germany. Just the most hideous, hideous buildings. The SABC building is an example of just hideous, just gross fascist architecture.
UNISA's
gross. It's disgusting, right?
Yep.
Horrible building.
But here they are still standing. Now we can't even figure out how to fix potholes in roads. So as much as you know, if you're into aesthetics, fine. But here they are. Those buildings are still the same and rock solid now. We can't even build roads with potholes now. So
they are, you know. but they're revolting looking. And we're talking purely about aesthetics now, because we're talking about, would any city in South Africa qualify for being a UNESCO World Heritage Site? And I say this with ignorance because I don't know. They might already be, but I very much doubt
Springs.
It. Springs, exactly. Elaine
Springs
says,
with its art deco.
Elaine says, it's called concrete brutalism. That's exactly right. Calvinistic masonry, says Corona's boring. Yeah, that's about right, too. Oh, my God. Apartheid did not have a positive impact on architecture. You don't say, Michael. Michael's 100% right there, too. Jesus, there's some ugly buildings. Have you ever been into either Sunnyside in Johannesburg? Sunnyside in Pretoria or Hillbrow in Johannesburg, or any of those old kind of the flat neighborhoods that used to be the cool places in the 70s and 80s. And you look at how disgusting that architecture is with that. They loved that, that yellow glass as well. That yellow kind of, the glass you can't see through. It's almost like it's glass that's been tempered or blown differently or something. You know the stuff I'm talking about. That hideous yellow glass, which is so goddamn depressing, and tiles with like specks in them, and that hideous concrete everywhere, and these dark little corners and dark little rooms. And it was almost as if they wanted to depress the population when they decided to build these things, because it wasn't as if it was necessarily cheaper. It was just it was an aesthetic choice. I mean, I really do believe that if the 70s and the 80s, in fact, even the late 60s, 70s and 80s, were wiped from the historical record and the archaeological record, we wouldn't lose anything. There's none of that architecture that I would want right now. There's none of that I'm missing right now. There's none of that I go, oh, you know, that was so beautiful. We really need more of that. All that Art Deco shit too, that was disgusting, although that predates what the era I'm talking about by quite a while. Horrible. UNISA building looks like a sinking ship, says Cabello. Yeah, and these days you could argue that it is. The warmest day in Ireland, coldest day in Gauteng, opposite poles are on a mission. Yeah. Yeah. Not nice in Johannesburg today. Michael says, don't wipe away the music of that period. No, I agree. The music was the best. But the architecture was horrendous. Especially in South Africa, the glass.
Well, I was going to say, if you've been to Germany, listen, you know what I think of Merkel, and I don't mind the Germans, but they are maybe worse than us. It is, and that's on both sides of the old wall, by the way. It's not just people will obviously say, oh, it's just the east. No. Germany architecture, and Pumi, of course, she'll know, having been German educated.
No.
They are functional and, revolting.
Hideous building. But it's also because so much of the German heritage architecture was just bombed into dust at the end of World War II. So they had to rebuild everything new. And because of that, a lot of it was 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And it's really bad. There's nothing about that stuff that I like. So here's Zach trying to stand up for that 50s, 60s, 70s architecture. Zach saying, that glass actually works wonders against the sun, G. One-way mirror type of effect. Yuck. The Avo green color scheme that they used to do bathrooms in. Yep.
Yo.
Well, you got the bath and the loo and the basin in that Avo green color. Ugh. H. Makes me sick. Oh, my God. Hey, beige.
And then those tiles.
Those tiles
with the
pattern in it.
With the patterns.
It's like a flower.
There was also that orange and brown. That orange and brown combo.
Orange and brown. I mean, you really need to be some kind of masochist to want to make your bathroom orange and brown or avo green. You need to have your head red. Who came up with that idea? You know what it reminds me of? That the depressing opening credits of Achter Elke Mann, or, you know, those kinds of shows. That's what it reminds me of. What a horrible time. Ugh. Really. Just ugh. So awful. And school. It reminds me of school. Anyway, not the best
part. What the hell is
It was a TV. It was a TV show for me that was terrible. It was on SABC. Very depressing. Anyway, we're going to get to the Burning Platform, which is next. It is 7 o'clock already. I can't believe how quickly the time's going this morning. The Burning Platform, as always, brought to you by Nando's. And this morning we will be joined by Mike Schussler. We'll be joined by Bulelani Balabala, and we'll be talking mostly about business and the effects of last week's chaos on business. We'll be talking a little bit about the overall lockdown implications for business, and we'll be speaking to two people who we haven't had on the Burning Platform before, but who've been sorely missed, Mike Schussler and Bulelani Balabala. Pumi Mashiho will join me in the next hour as well, and of course, we're doing it for you, so you're most welcome. Join us in the next hour of cliffcentral.com for the Burning Platform. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere. Cliffcentral.com.